This is El Puente Podcast with
Kim,
Dave,
and Michael.
Conversations at the intersection of race, sexuality, religion, politics, art, music, and everything in between.
We're stronger when we connect the POVs of POCs.
Oh, y'all talking about some nasty dream?
No,
it was a you know, your typical dream about New Year's and trying to get to the party. I don't know if you ever had that dream before. You know, you're trying to desperately to get to the party, but there's all these obstacles in your way, and you can't get to the party by midnight. And you know, it's just like and then you're like, midnight comes, and you're by yourself.
Oh, and you're kissing your hand,
and then you wake up sweating. Oh my god. What does it mean?
This is like the replacement of the high school dream where, right, where you had that dream where you were always going to, you were going to take a final and you like
had realize you're to naked.
Go to class. Well, yeah. And you hadn't been in the class all semester.
Yes.
And you're about to take a final. It's like,
yes. You're like, I know none of this.
Yeah, that happened to me in reality. My dreams came reality. Oh, yeah. Remember I did that, I had that biology final and I hadn't gone to class.
Oh, in college.
And I drew pictures for the answers. And the professor wrote on the top, "Why did you bother even coming?" Special. I was like, what else am I going to do? I didn't know the answers.
Oh my god.
Some pictures.
Do I get some points for showing up at least?
Right. Yeah.
I want to see what you did in the art class for the final. Shit.
Oh, I
wrote it by biology.
After the trauma that Michael put me through with his art projects, the art teacher made a plan, made an agreement with me. I will give you an A if you just stay in the class, because I was so traumatized. I was like, I'm going to drop art. And he was like, do not drop art. I will give you an A. If you just stay in the class.
Wow.
Bribery. And he gave me an A.
And don't touch any of the tools.
Just sit there in the corner.
I got a metal shard that took out a chunk of my breast.
Oh, my God.
No joke. Yeah. Doing an art project.
It wasn't mine. It wasn't mine. Don't blame me for that one.
No. No. Yeah. We were sculpting, and a big chunk came and took out a big chunk of my breast.
Yeah. Speaking of artists, shall we tell the listeners that we have a special artist guest?
You may have heard a fourth breathing pattern in this recording thus far.
Weird.
Yes. So we have my friend and artist and just all around badass person, Bug Davidson.
Hi there.
All right.
I like your voice.
Thank you.
Yeah, right? That's very nice.
That is some ASMR right there.
I feel like I'm one of the sweaty balls ladies.
Yes, you totally do.
I've thought about that soft. Many a time when we do this podcast.
A little soft baker person.
That's like taking me way back.
Right?
Yeah.
Good times.
Right.
But you were saying maybe possibly thinking about Austin or...
Well, it's funny because I was listening to you guys talk about that a couple of times on the show. And, you know, just it's really interesting to hear all those debates because so many of us decided on this city when it was such a different place.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, grew up here and it's become such a different place and if for good or bad. And I know a lot of people... have come to this point where they're like, well, now that it's a larger city, I could live in another larger city and have the same experiences of, you know, traffic and high rent and all these other things. So it's kind of opened a door for a couple of people that I've talked with this about to be like, well, might as well. Whereas in the past it was like, no, it's this little hideaway, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, the art scene is still really small.
Yes.
But I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for us.
Yeah.
It's, I guess, a different experience than in other places.
Well, and you get to travel and make work as well. So that's like, if I'm home base here and I get to go other places, it's, you know, fantastic.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've noticed you've done some work out in Boston.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which project was that was in Boston?
Well, I went to graduate school in Boston.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yep. And that was very new to me. I'd never, mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be more like New York. And then I got there and I was like, no, this is not the So I went without a car and I went, you know, it was just different than I expected, but good. And one of the reasons I went there was because I didn't know anyone in Boston and I didn't know much about it. And I, you know, I just sort of was like needing that at my, in the point I was at in my life. I was like, I'm either going to take out a ton of student loans and go to graduate school, or I'm going to, you know, spend it all on therapy. So, and there's no like therapy loan that I know of. So yeah.
But
yeah.
Boy, if there was.
Right?
I'm telling you.
Right? Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I know you're with me, Kim.
Oh, honey.
Yes.
It's like Sally Mae Article T. Like, no, is it available for me?
Yeah.
No. Oh my gosh. I've actually been thinking about going to grad school lately.
Me too.
It's kind of freaking me out.
Me too.
At this age, it seems like, oh, is my brain still in a functional state for...
See, you know? I think I'm hungry enough.
Are you?
I'm thinking of going for speech therapy
and
working with stroke victims. I want to just completely change my career.
Hey.
That's a great path for you, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Well, so, I would make the argument that it's better to go after you have so much life experience compared to... I was in graduate school with people who hadn't been out of school since kindergarten, you know?
Oh. Right.
So they're going from one thing to the next thing to the next thing, and it was just like, wow. And they're fantastic people. It's not... It was a choice that worked out well for them, but, you know,
yeah.
I'd been paying rent, working various jobs, doing all these things, so I had all of these... stories to tell and experiences, and yeah, versus coming through a school system like completely with no break from education.
Yeah. So that's really, really
interesting.
I'd say
you're better off to go.
All right.
Well, thanks.
You know?
Yeah. Still scary. <That's true. laughs> It's a huge life change. Because I mean, I would.
What would you go in, what specifically?
Oh, MFA. Got my MFA.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have an MFA or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing is I became a student again and I started eating anything. It was like I was suddenly back in that same place where it was like...
Oh, ramen and Taco Bell.
Yeah. Do you want like a small dry cookie? Absolutely. Thank you. You know? Like, what's going on? Like, I'm an adult.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
that's
it was
funny.
You just like go straight back into that state of mind of like, okay, I have no money. I have nothing. I have like books around me. Like... Hygiene went to the wayside. Dietary needs restrictions.
So I need to get Febreze and diet pills.
I think that'll do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And lots of coffee. Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Well, for me anyway.
Yeah,
I was a student. That's, yeah. Yeah. So
that or what was it? No dos. Remember those?
Oh my god.
Oh, it's horrible. Like you were awake, but you had no mental acuity at all. Like you just.
Yes.
I sat with a test. Anyway. Yeah. Being on no-dos, it was just really a bad idea.
For you.
For me,
yes.
For sure.
Oh my gosh.
I never did no-dos. So tell us a little bit about how you went from Boston to Austin.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm from Houston originally. And so growing up queer in Texas, I got to Austin as quickly as possible because it was sort of like, you know, not that there wasn't a queer situation going on in Houston, but it was a little different than what I was looking for. Like I wanted like rock and punk music and all this, you know, so I've been in Austin on and off as long as possible. So yeah, I was working, making films mostly and working in the service industry and just busting my butt all the time. And I hit that point. So I went to Boston, had my like graduate experience there, and then came back home because my partner was still here also. And then, so really it was just returning home, you know, which has been great. And I sort of never lost a lot of the community that I have here. And so it was just kind of...
Home, but a safer version of home. Not home, but
yes,
the
exactly,
next best thing.
Home. Exactly.
Yes.
So yeah, this has been home-based and I think will continue to be at this point, so
I like that you call it home base. That's neat. I think that's what it will always be for me too. Yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you, Debbie? I know you're not feeling that.
Is it home base? It's home base. San Antonio and Austin, I guess, are home base. But like you were saying a second ago, Bug, you know, it's not the same city as it used to be.
Right.
Like probably when you came back, when was that you came back?
That would have been the fall of 14.
Okay.
Yep.
So even then, in that period of time, the change has been crazy. It's mm-hmm. not the same city. And I wonder, that's certainly my experience, you know, that's mm-hmm. why it doesn't really feel like home base anymore for me. But I'm wondering, mm-hmm. you know, what was it about Austin that really kind of set your artistic self on fire?
I've always enjoyed this narrative about, you know, like the wide open expanse of Texas or something and, yeah. and really subverting that. It's something that, whether I like it or not, is sort of in me, even though I like to pervert it as much as possible. So I definitely, like, being in New England was a real eye-opener for me in some ways, I guess, because it took me a long time to understand, like, what was going on there. Like, even the way, like, where bars were or anything, because just being here, everything's outside, everything's on the exterior, including, like, our bodies and, you know, all these ways. Like, there would be people I met who had a ton of tattoos, but I never knew, you know, mm-hmm, because you're just, mm-hmm. like, so covered up all the time.
Right.
So
that's interesting.
You know, returning here was in this way, returning back to being able to have familiarity, not only with, like, the people and a city I once knew, but then also just, like, the climate and the way people are conversational. Like, I actually really enjoyed messing with strangers in Boston by just being really chatty with them. Because, you know, like, I'm like this chatty Southern person in the grocery store. And they would just be like, huh, you know. So, yeah, it was crazy to see people, like, back up. And,
yeah.
Like, wonder if I was losing it or, you know, if I had, like, a hidden Bluetooth on or something.
Am I on hidden camera? What's going on
here? Right.
Yeah.
But being back, like, Austin has changed so much, and I'm really thankful that there is an art community here, because I was much more in the film community before. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that go, it's so up and down, I feel like, for film sure. makers in this city.
Absolutely.
And the way that people really have to work within, like, that market. Not that artists don't, but it seems like,
yeah, it's different.
There's yeah. a bit more give and take.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
would you say more opportunity too? For artists as opposed to filmmakers?
I have no idea. I think it's still a great film town, too. But you can really get cornered, and I bet musicians might say this as well, you can get cornered into, like, genre work
yeah,
here. There's a certain definitely. Type of film that this city likes a lot, I think. And I like that genre film, but perhaps there's, like, maybe some pressure in that way. I don't know. I'm kind of not as keyed into all of that as I once was. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, like in the wedding band for, like, I'm in the wedding band industry and it's big time. There's a lot of 80s music. And so you end up like we started out more like Motown, you know, that's really mm-hmm. where my voice fits best in that style of music, throwback or, you know, that type mm-hmm. of genre. But yeah, I feel like we've been pigeonholed, like we got to do 80s music for a lot of the weddings because that's what people are into right now, or that age group is really pushing for that.
Yeah.
Those are the people with the money.
Yeah. Right? That is true.
You know what I mean? Cater yeah. to that audience that has the cash. Mm-hmm. Your art actually really interests me because it intersects with what I do professionally, which is film and video.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, your journey to discovering that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, specifically, I would like to hear about how, like, what was it that, when did that switch happen for you from sure. just like film to
yeah.
video art or...
Sure. Well, I started, like I say, I'm trained as a filmmaker, and that's sort of how I, you know, my day job is that I manage studios and run film crews and things. So I was making really weird things that I started to just have this question, like, is the way I want people to interact with this to sit in the dark and be in quiet, you know, and how does that serve, like, what I'm trying to communicate? And I think that started to push me towards, and also just, like, creating space, playing with light, and then the technology with, you know, when I got out of film school, it was the first HD camera, and I'm totally dating myself.
Yes. Right now.
The first HD camera, right, hey, was coming out. And so the things that were, that was really this opening, and there was that digital video period of time where it was like, okay, all of a sudden filmmaking is democratized and anyone can tell a story. And it's like, yeah, sure, but it looks like shit, you know? Like, I really want to see these, so many of these things, but, like, they're really rough to watch. So, yeah. And that was the time in which I came out of film school, and I was making short films and enjoying making short films, and I still do. But I started wanting to investigate more that experimental side. I would also go to experimental screenings and be, you know, the lights would come up and it would be me and one other weirdo there, you know, which I loved, but it was also like, what's happening? So I just started making things that were meant to be more in space and to create space. But what's interesting now about what I make is that it totally picks on the cinema, right? So it's like, I can't leave the cinema alone in some way. Like, I'm now making experimental theater that's like about movies.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And I can really trace that back to my family being a group of people that loves films but doesn't really communicate directly about their feelings. So instead of, you know, I don't know, instead of my father wanting to tell me something about, you know, his film, he would quote a film. So it's my language base from an early age. So even now when I'm trying to express things that, you know, mean a lot to me, I kind of revert back to this way of, like, quoting films or, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, talking through film language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Film language, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think me and my mom do that too. My earliest memories of knowing that I was going to be a filmmaker were me and my mom just getting together and watching black and white films on, mm-hmm, what was that old channel? Maybe American Movie Classics. Turner. Remember that channel? Turner Movie, yeah, Classics or whatever. And just watching these old movies of these old people who, you know, they talk like this and all this crazy stuff. And, like, it was weird, but at the same time, it was like, it brought my mom so much joy.
Yes.
She loved those movies. And I think by me seeing her enjoying that is like, oh, I want to make people enjoy,
oh, things. That's, like, such a sweet story, David. Yeah.
It is, my, is, you know, very sweet.
So me and my mom still to this day we talk in movies too.
Yeah.
So you talk to each other like that then?
We talk like this.
Julia, come clean your room.
Come clean your room. But mother, I don't want to.
Well, I have the same thing with my sister. We solely communicate via text through memes. Like, yeah, I can't, yeah, think of the last time we texted a word to each other.
I know. But memes are a lot like movies in that, or visual things. It's like, mm-hmm, you can, it's that cliche. You can communicate so much with pictures.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. You know, what is the cliche? True. A picture is worth 1,000 words or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? It's true. Oh.
It's so true. I mean, it's just like I hate to compare it to, like, emojis, but, you know, it's like people speak in emojis now. That's, you know.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to explain what the emojis mean anymore. Yeah. Like, people kind of just,
if,
like,
you know the person well, like, you know the connotation it has.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
No. You just don't want to make a mistake.
Right. So. Speaking of, you know, the way you reference movies, there's a piece that you did called "You'll Never Love Me Back."
Mm.
I,
yes,
wonder if you would, like, tell our listeners a little bit about that.
That's, yeah, about. That's such a, oh yeah, that's really interesting. Okay. So I started making this collage of, I started with a totally different project in mind. So, right, this is something that we do creatively,
oh,
right? You, yeah, start with this idea and then it's like, this isn't, it's not working or something else is happening. So that's what happened with that. But what ended up happening is that I was taking hate speech and violence towards, like, queer trans people in films, and I chose films that were films that my parents could have seen in their, in our home, like in my family home. So, things that were from the time I was born to, the contemporary moment when I was making them, and, using, you know, just cutting it all together, because I think taking stock of what representation had happened and what I, you know, what had been in the home that I grew up in that was like representations of people like me now. Mm-hmm. And then I first used the video, so it escalates over the course of the video. It starts with like the word faggot or queer or dyke. And then by the end, it's murderous scenes. And sometimes it's, you know, well, anyway, and they're all American films, too. And that was really important to me, that it was things that could have been, like, in my home growing up.
Wow. Yeah.
So, and then I put it on a loop. I think that the video is about 3.5 minutes long. And I put it on a loop, and I sat in front of it, and I drank as a performance. Mm. And I think I lasted about 3 hours. And it was interesting because over the course of the performance, like, it mattered less to me. So not only was I drinking so that it sort of dulled all my, you know, emotions, but I just got used to it, right? Because it's right. A loop.
Yeah.
And then I've used a lot of those images since. So in some way, like, I'm very... Because also... When I was coming out, right, in, like, the 90s and the early aughts, but really the 90s, so many of the films that were, like, affirming were also films where people like me died in the end or yes. were the murderer.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. it was like, okay, in order to get to see someone who's like me, I need to engage with this really insidious material. Mm. And that was something that I was still trying to figure out in many ways. You know, like, I think Boys Don't Cry is a yes. really great example.
Yes, I noticed that.
Of a film where it's like, okay, here's someone who I'm getting to see this representation. And this, of course, is before the internet. So this is mm-hmm. when you have to go get and access this stuff, like, with your cell. Anyway, you have to, you know.
Yeah.
You got to do the work. You got to do the work. You got to go find it.
And then that's a film where there's, like, this really, really difficult rape scene. And
I believe.
I mean, it's so violent. Mm. So that all those things were, and I think that was probably the start of me, like, picking on this Hollywood device, mm-hmm. you know. And it's gotten a little less literal, I hope. But, yeah.
That's awesome. I wonder your reaction to one of the things that we're going to plan to talk about soon was the 368, if the latest figure, trans murders, murders of trans women particularly, that have happened, you know, nationwide or maybe even global.
Yeah, that was need to double check in 2018. That. Right?
In 2018, yeah. The last year. And, you know, just... You had said something just a second ago, like, about the desensitization, is that the word?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Of over time, of these images playing and over and over. And I wonder if you feel like, in the age of y'all's president, we don't say his name here, age of y'all's president, have we entered this desensitized age where, I mean, that figure on any other piece of paper or metrics would say this is a national emergency, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's not getting that kind of attention. You know? So, and I wonder what your politics are as far as that's concerned.
It's so hard. I think, well, and then talking about, like, engaging with these statistics, right? How do we both engage and then have any sort of self-preservation in those moments? And how, you know, like, to pick and choose what you're going to take in.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and then just to say there are all these wonderful things happening simultaneously. Like, people are talking to children about, you know, gender in new ways, yes, right? So, like, absolutely. The future is brighter in that
true,
way.
That is true.
But... Yes, I don't know. I don't know what to say, honestly. I'm sorry I don't have a better...
No, you don't have
to. No, it's
an answer because it's... it all comes back to the threat to masculinity in many ways.
Yes.
And it's something that I don't understand, because I'm sort of like, not only am I an in-between gender person, I'm very aware when I get into like masculine spaces that I don't understand masculinity either, because of the way that I was socially,
Socialized.
Female. yeah. Or human, maybe? I don't know. But, yeah, so I don't understand that toxic masculinity and how it operates, or which I think is the real threat that people see when they, and I've also been interested in this thing as well about the attraction revulsion with trans people. When I was a very butch presenting woman, I would have these situations where I could tell men wanted to be violent with me, and I did have violent situations with men. But now that I'm the person that I am, and I get read both ways on any given day, there's specific men though that they want to both be sexual and violent with me, and I can feel it, and I know it, and and it's something about that in between that they find attractive and then really can't handle it.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's the attraction revulsion. And I think that is...
Yeah. It's their attraction, which then buttresses against some cultural thing that causes revulsion.
Yeah. Well, I think the revulsion is towards themselves.
Right.
You know,
but they take it out.
Exactly.
They project it.
Yeah. Self-hate.
Oof.
But I think that's the key in there, is like, how do we, and I have a friend who's a trans woman, and one of the things she talked about in her work, she is a trans woman, talks about in her work is like, I don't want you to just love me, I want you to take me home to your family, I want you to not be ashamed of me, like,
right.
and that seems like such a simple thing for any one of us, but I think trans women get, again, like the shit into the stick on that, and it's just if that could be positioned better too. So not only do we need to address like that masculinity that can't confront the attraction, and I'm not saying that all of these violent situations are based on that, but I think a lot of the problem is that masculinity is too fragile in some way in those moments to handle it.
Yeah.
So for me, that's kind of like where the cake gets baked around the violent, like.
Sure. The violence.
Can y'all help me with terminology? Because I get confused. I really do. When you say, and not that it matters, but
sure.
When you say trans woman, does that mean the trans woman is who they have become?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So a transition usually talks about the destination.
Okay.
So if you're talking about a male to female transgender person, that person's ending up on the female side.
Okay, perfect. And so,
the destination.
Well, this is particularly interesting to me because, you know, I have a son and we are raising him to be very gender fluid, you know. He wears dresses, he wears jewelry, he wears pants, you know, and we are, you know, we try to prepare him for the world, you know, that will absolutely hate him for doing that because he is such a beautiful girl when he, you know, he's beautiful both ways.
He is.
And I worry for him. I'm hoping that our world will. I mean, I do know in the younger generation, they are talking a lot more openly about, and it is nothing for them, Z, she, all of it. It's just, I'm getting so educated by, you know, like I said, this Girls Rock Camp shirt I'm wearing too. You know, I've been educated a lot. And I think that is hopeful, you know, in the midst of this horrendous, I think people need to be aware of that number and they need to hear it. And maybe those younger generation, or no, I shouldn't just say younger generation, but just that new thought of people can help change those numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder if you're optimistic about the youth generally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that I work at a university and because I have to say, there is this divide now. I'm aging into the time in my life where I feel very different than the college students. Whereas, I think it's really apparent at this point, right?
You hurt the day after you drink.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I need sleep.
Right.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But, yeah, I'm just amazed at the problems they don't have. And that's at the college level. So I think even more we're going to end up, and I'm at a specific institution and I'm very aware of that too. But even so, I think that I do have a ton of hope, and I think that they're going to see all the things that are going on, and I hope they have no time for so much of the
the BS,
the bullshit. I'm sorry, should I not?
No, okay, totally. Fine. Yeah. Okay.
Even bullshit. I mean, even younger though. So, like, I teach elementary school, and several years ago, the kids were allowed to dress up for Halloween, and we had a fourth grade student who kind of always presented as had like gay attributes, if you will, and for Halloween decided to come in drag.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they're trans or what, you know. I mean, right. This is like a, you know, what, 10-year-old kid.
Right, yeah. Right.
I'm still figuring it out.
But you have never seen a happier kid in your fucking life.
Aww.
Like, I remember, like, walking past the playground and they were on the swing and, like, those heels were just up in the air.
Oh, my God.
It's like they were living their life.
Yeah.
And I was terrified. I'm like, oh, my God. Because it's a predominantly black and brown school, historically. Yeah. And so, you know, they're bringing what they learn at home. And so I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to be horrible.
This is going to be painful.
No, not one student said anything mm-hmm. negative to them.
That's awesome.
All day.
Wow.
And that's like, ugh, because you have such awesome. Hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was years ago. That was like maybe 10 years ago. So, you know, it's only gotten better since then, I would say.
Do you know what happened to the student?
No.
We should look and see if they're on RuPaul or something.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my son, every opportunity of dress up, he wears a dress to school. If it's pajama day, he wears a gown that's pink and glittery.
So he borrows yours, basically?
As if he could fit, it would swallow him. But yeah, I think that when I see that, it does make me feel hopeful for him.
Yeah.
You know, because I think he's absolutely going to be
fierce.
Oh,
fierce.
Yes.
He is a drag queen or trans or something.
Right. Yeah.
Or just a straight man who is aware and open.
That's true. We have at my school, we have a teacher that wears a kilt on a regular basis, and it had my boys in my class put on these skirts for the we were doing the Spanish dance.
Mm-hmm.
And they put on these, the boys were the first ones, I want to wear a skirt, I want to wear a skirt. And I've got like 15 boys dancing in skirts and it just feeling all free in these skirts.
That's so good.
Cool. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yes. So hopefully there is hope.
There is hope. Yeah. There's always hope. There's always hope.
Yes.
Yeah.
So were you going to ask a question? Because I was going to ask an art-related question.
Oh.
I didn't want to.
I was going to segue into the next video.
Yeah.
But
you do your thing.
You sure?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I can tell we were both like, I ask that question.
Yeah. What I admire about your work is the way that you talk about your politics and your beliefs, which is something that I've recently been kind of transitioning to in my work. And I've always found like it was going to be hard because like my older work had a lot of humor in it and it had a lot of whimsical aspects to it. And so I was like, okay, but I feel like I can't not talk about politics and what's going on in the world. And so I really admire that you do that so deftly. I mean, even if it's not like overt humor. So I'm thinking of a video called Gun and Camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that
piece. First of all, it's funny because I don't again, I'm really clueless when I start making, so I don't really even know what the fuck's going on. I usually just like, oh, there's the one image I want to play with or whatever, but then by the time it's over, I'm like, wow, this could be upsetting, you know? So I don't really even mean to do these things, and certainly if I could, I probably would be like, no, this is, you know, fraught with danger. But again, like growing up a Texan, growing up with, you know, my mom is a big gun carrier. Yeah. And it's because she was alone with two little kids a lot, you know, so she often had a firearm with her, and I saw her pull it out and defend us. So, whoa, you know, more than once. I've had this really unbalanced relationship with guns, because I feel like on one hand, you know, here's something that I can't deny was this part of my life that was actually positive for my family, mm-hmm, in ways. And then also, she's never shot anyone, so that's good. Please. Hey. I'm like, no. Yeah, it's also really upsetting what's going on. You know, God, where was I the other day? And someone told me, it was yesterday. I was getting tattooed, and my tattoo artist says to me, do you know that 30-something percent of the U.S. believes that we're headed towards civil war? And all I could think was like, and everyone who thinks that is heavily armed.
That is
right?
True.
So, like, I find that terrifying.
Yes.
But the camera and gun piece is a really, also for me, was a huge learning experience, because I thought, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get all different kinds of people, get guns in their hands, and we're going to all go through the same prompts. And then, of course, I only have like women and queer people show up to do this, because it's like everyone I know. So it becomes like something very different, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't intentional. It's just like me doing what I was doing. And I think that was the first time where I was like, okay, you know, like, fuck casting, fuck trying to find like certain types of people or whatever. Yeah. Like, I'm just going to go with what this cross-section of people who are around me and are interested in participating in the same ideas. So, I was interested in putting a gun in someone's hand and saying, like, now pose, now do this, now do that. And then showing them films where it was both a hero that they may identify with and a hero that they definitely were going to probably feel, you know, challenged by. An experiment. And I think a lot of the things that I do, I'm like, I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm, I'm just experimenting.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think that's...
Yeah.
Well, were people's reactions to that pretty visceral?
I've only had a few people react to it at all, you know? Like, do you mean the participants or, like, a viewer for the video?
Either, yeah.
The participants surprised me, because so many of the people right afterward told me that they had a very black and white feeling about guns. So, you know, one woman told me, this whole thing made me think of my father, and it was very emotional for me. Another person, like, couldn't get the gun out of their hand quickly enough, and really felt upset by being asked to pose like a hero with a gun. But I think that's the conversation that I was interested in having. And, you know, also a lot of my family's in the military, you know, so like, and what I've learned is that people don't want to talk about that, you know, it's like, and I'm like, wow, okay, that's just kind of how I understood life. So, you know, again, it's these conversations that I wouldn't otherwise get to have unless I was doing these experiments and being like, would you pose with a gun for me, you know, and watch this short video. Also, there's something about procedure that I really like, you know, like as an artist, where I'm like, okay, here's what we're going to do, you know, and it's ridiculous. And I love that. But people do it. And that, it's so exciting to me, where it's like
directing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know, you, what kind of films do you make?
Well, right now I make high school films. I teach high school students to make films. But I've always been animated by realism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, very avant-garde cinema verite kind of filmmaking, just putting the audience in a real situation,
right,
and not necessarily give them the glamorized version of it,
right.
So I'm very into that.
But you know, whenever I first arrive on a project that I'm making, especially if I'm directing, but sometimes I, and then like you see actors and then they're in costumes or whatever, I'm like, why is everyone here? Because it's like something very internal in my mind becoming external, and then I'm just like, why are they playing this game with me? You know, like, it shocks the shit out of me every time. And yeah, so that part is really exciting, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if I could make people, like, fill out a form and then eat a pie and then do something else, like, spin around, I would, because I'm just like, let's all do the same thing in the specific order. Yeah. You know? Like, it's so weird. I don't know.
Yeah. You might make a good teacher then if you ever want to get into teaching.
Oh, cool.
That's a big part of teaching, mm-hmm, is mm-hmm. making them do what you want in a certain order.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that one has like a, I don't want to say absurd humor to it, but there is, you know, just that you're putting this gun in these people's hands. It's a dark humor. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about, so you had a two-person show at ICOSA.
Yeah.
Do you say ICOSA or ECOSA?
ICOSA.
ICOSA. Okay, yeah. That's what I've always thought. And then yeah. I heard other people say it on their way, and I'm like, I don't know.
Oh,
so it's a gallery here in Austin. You did a two-person show with Amanda McGierney. It was last year, right?
I think it's been 2 years now. I think it's 2017. Are you serious?
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that funny?
That just flew by.
Time flies when you're getting old.
Yeah.
Hey. Speak for yourself.
I was.
So that one, that one had some humor in it as well. But again, you were talking about these dark subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think the description of the show was something about a collection of loss.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what that means.
Well, we were using as a jumping off point, like, and I know Amanda specifically was wanting to deal with some grief emotions in the work she was showing, and mm-hmm. I was interested in one of the things I was interested in was the idea of making people comfortable in the gallery and mm-hmm. and how the space that ICOSA had at the time as a 20-person art collective was a old garage, an old mechanics garage, and it had no climate control. Our show was in August.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So right away I was like, everyone's going to be extremely uncomfortable. Uh-huh. And you know, thinking about this idea of loss, like I was interested in the things I wouldn't let myself think about. So I was experiencing after the drought of 2011. Y'all remember when Bastrop mm-hmm. was on fire?
Yes.
I was experiencing this thing where it was like, the world's burning or something, but I was like, don't think about it, you know? So just like the environment is this large concept that I wouldn't even allow myself to engage with. And so that I ended up doing this performance with Blocks of Ice where I was attempting to cool people down, but of course, like it just kept melting. So I had this, I think they're the ones for the snow cone machine. Uh-huh. So they're like these blocks.
Yeah.
And I was giving people like foot rests and asking them to take off their shoes, but then holding the blocks over them and dripping it on them. And so I'm doing this, and then I'm sweating. So there's just all of the dripping and like this physical loss and representation mm-hmm. of how, you know, like I can't really make you comfortable, but yet then people kind of were, which again, experiments, you know, it's like, oh, hey, this is working. This is great. But, and I everything was red in the show that mm-hmm. I built. I built a really ugly curtain out of like just scraps of red material.
It was very striking.
And hung that. I don't know why I do certain things sometimes, but because I was like, well, I really can't sew, but it ended up as a thing.
Yeah, no,
it
was great.
It looks like this real striking quilt. Blood red.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were like gym pants in it.
So yeah.
So you could kind of poke your face. Yeah, I was like, that was my favorite part of it.
It was
like,
fun.
Yeah, the basketball shorts.
Oh, yeah.
Holes, you know?
Yeah, that's perfect.
But yeah, that show is, it's also very difficult to make a two-person show because it's not, you know, you really either have to meld together or try to, yeah. So that was my first two-person show,
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. One of my favorite elements of that show was the video with the popsicles. It's this just really absurd, almost like Dada
level of
like just like what? This is so funny. So funny.
It's, yeah. I love to dance for comedy. Like, I can only try to be serious dancing for like 2 minutes and then it's just comedy.
That's
so
great.
Yeah.
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 More people should do that.
Yeah. Describe the piece for our listeners, please.
So I put on white denim, white denim jeans and a jacket. And then I took popsicles and drilled little holes in them. And then I guess it would have been about 100 popsicles in the end.
Yeah. Whoa.
And so I put little safety pins in those and really quickly got two comrades and got them all on the jacket. And in the August heat, or I guess it was July more like, and ran out to the park and danced until they were either melted or flung off my body. And yeah, it was very ridiculous and over the top.
Yeah, but very poignant at the same time.
Interesting. That's something I don't, you know, I think once my face and my body is there and doing something very vulnerable like that, I don't know what it is anymore. You know, so I don't think I have the, what do you call it when you can't see like the edges, the peripheral vision.
Yeah.
I think I only just have the like, that's my dumbass dancing in popsicles, you know. That's all I have. But I was like, this is funny. Like, I think anyone can go like, oh wow, it starts. And it was interesting too because it was so heavy that it broke the hanger as we were pinning everything on.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
And then it was stickier than I thought.
Oh, no.
So, and I was ready to ride back in the back seat of my truck.
Oh.
But I you know, or the bed of the truck.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was really uncomfortable.
Oh.
For 5 minutes. But it was just like, still. Oh, right. I hate sticky stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you eaten popsicles since?
Absolutely. No white denim since, though.
No.
That was a stretch. That was a stretch.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
That's great.
I have one kind of question that, you know, just listening to you talk about your trajectory, your career, identifying as trans. I've educated now several trans students who've gone through my film program. And I wonder what advice you would give to them as they are going out into the world being both a filmmaker, film artist, and a trans person. Knowing, you know,
sure,
what you've gone through. And
yeah, absolutely. I think to not, if they think that something is integral to their story, to keep it, and to not be advised away from something that they want to say or do or show anyone else. I think that there's a lot of people who might be giving well-meaning advice that aren't having to live the things that others are living.
Mm-hmm.
And that even when I talk to other artists, you know, I try to be aware of like, if I'm doing critiques or something, like, you know, those stories deserve to be yours, you know? And I think that to just stick by their thoughts, you know, to gracefully, hopefully, and this is how I take this advice for myself, of course, try to gracefully hear advice and to take it in and to consider it, but then also to stick to their guns.
Yeah.
when it's time to leave something out, time to use a word or a character, you know, do it. And because especially when you're young, make those mistakes, make them yours. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I was advised often to tone it down a little, or, you know, certain things where I look back and go, well, I was making someone else's mistake here. And I don't know that my idea was any better, but it was mine.
You know? Yeah.
And I like it got taken away from me in those moments. So, and especially now there's so much media, there's very little you can do that's going to be extreme in a way that's going to have you, you know, kicked out of school or removed or anything like that. So just make your own mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I'm going to take that message.
There you go.
To them. And to heart myself.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's
great advice.
As teachers, you know, it's hard to do that because you kind of have to, seems like water yourself down a little, you know. But but I think there are risk-taking actions you can do to stretch the people's imagination around you.
Yeah. Well, we as teachers might have to, you know, water it down a little bit, but we also need to be simultaneously teaching our students to not.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I agree wholeheartly. Yes. Good point.
Yeah. It's a hard job, though. I don't envy y'all.
No, but what you're doing is so, I mean, it changes people's lives. That's when right. They look at things like that. It really does. Matters.
It really does. Mm-hmm. It really does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wouldn't be making anything without seeing the things that I saw of those that came before me. So absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's an inspiration. Thank you. You're an inspiration. I think I know I keep talking about my son a lot, but I think, man, I would love for him to see, you know, his art and as a trans person and just that unique perspective. I think it would really be helpful to so many, you know.
Yeah, well, and this podcast too, you know, when I first like posted it up, I was like, everyone needs to listen to this because it was just like, I really am enjoying this format so much right now too. And the way y'all are doing it, I really appreciate just the way it's been really positive too. I've noticed how, even though y'all are dealing with hard issues and everything else, it's really positive. And it's made, the other day I was like, I'm going to try to be a better person today. Cause like I was being nasty in my head, you know? And then y'all were being really positive and fucking good people. And I was like, okay, all right, I'm going to take that note, you know?
That's really thank you. Say, we're going to take that.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, I've been wanting to have you on for a while and like our schedules wouldn't match up, but I'm glad we finally make it happen.
I feel
happen.
Like I get to be in the cockpit of a cool plane.
You know?
I know. I was like, after it came out, I was like, that sounds like a little bit more scandalous than I meant it to be.
No, it's just me. I just make it that way.
Yeah. He's just drawn that way.
I'm just drawn that way. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to El Puente Podcast, an intersectional conversation where all our voices can meet.
Don't just sit there. Stand up. Don't just listen. Join the conversation.
On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or you can email us at bocamadremedia@gmail.com.